Welcome to the January 30th, 2015 Drupalize Me podcast. Drupalize Me. Hello, everybody. I am Addie, your hostess for today's Drupalize Me podcast. I have with me two folks from the Drupal community. One of them is Wampy, who is actually a lullabot. Say hello, Wampy.
Hello, everybody.
And I also have with me Greg Anderson, who is recently joined with Pantheon.
Good morning, Drush people.
Woohoo! And so the reason that we have Wampy and Greg on is to talk about Drush. Now, a lot of people know what Drush is and use Drush every single day. Some people don't know what Drush is, and if you don't, you need to know about it. Drush has been around for a number of years. We're going to get more into what Drush is and what's going on with all of that, but it's really kind of a critical tool for easing your life when working with Drupal. It does lots of things to make your life a lot easier, and we're going to kind of walk through what some of those things are. And it's one of the big advantages of Drupal versus, say, other content management systems that don't have this handy tool. So we're going to get into what is Drush, like what's so cool about it. We're going to get into some nitty gritty about like how the latest version of Drush is working, how you get it installed, why is it so weird, and some other things like that when we get into it. But before we do that, let me do the news and events real quick. In terms of Drupalize Me news, we just recently this week wrapped up a series on simple tests. So doing testing with Drupal 7 with simple tests that Joe Schindelar did. So that was a really cool series. And then we have some cool stuff that's coming up. We have some Module Monday stuff. We have some coding standards stuff. We have PHP Storm. If you are into IDEs, we've got a whole series coming out on that stuff. So that's what's going on in the video world for us. I also want to mention, we did a blog post recently, maybe last week, about a Drupal 8 survey that we're doing, and we would love for people to fill this out. We're trying to just find out where people are with what they want to know about Drupal 8 and learning Drupal 8. We did a similar survey last year, and we want to sort of see if anything has changed. And we're going to share the results with the community just so everybody can sort of have some sense of what's going on. But please go take the survey. You can get $10 off either a new or an existing Drupalize Me membership for just going ahead and doing that. You can find the link on our blog on drupalize.me, or I'll also put a direct link in the podcast notes. So please go take the survey. I guess another news, DrupalCon LA website is up, it just got up this week, and they are now taking submissions, for sessions and workshops and stuff like that. And on the DrupalCon related front, DrupalCon Latin America is happening in Bogota in like 11 days. It's like a week and a half away. So that's going to be pretty exciting. It's going to be the first DrupalCon in Latin America. It's in Colombia. And Joe Schindelar from Drupalize Me is going to be down there presenting, and he's going to be talking about the Drupal 8 plugin system. So I am very jealous of everybody who is going. Are either of you guys going, Wampy and Greg?
I'm not.
I will not be able to tell.
No. Okay. Yeah, have been an awesome trip. Oh, well. Okay, so we have all of that out of the way, dear listeners. Into the meat of it. So getting into all of this stuff, I talked about it, I've been really vague about it, but let's actually give a little bit of context and just make sure that everybody's up to speed on what Drush is so that everybody knows what it is that we're talking about. So does someone want to give a brief explanation of what is Drush?
Sure. The one line explanation is that Drush is the command line shell for Drupal. So what does that mean? Well, we may remember in the dark ages of web development, developers would have to sit in the dark and they would type printf or maybe even echo HTML head to get their web apps written and deployed. and people decided that this was a really labor-intensive and tedious thing to do. So content management systems similar to Drupal were invented, and now we can click and type and add and just manipulate the actual website itself through a graphical user interface, which was a great innovation for productivity, and it still is. Starting in the GUI is a great way to learn what Drupal is all about and what you can do with it in a very rapid manner. However, the problem with the GUI is if you start doing the same thing over and over and over again, then you start clicking a lot and you say, man, you know, I've clicked through this menu pattern so many times before, and where did I find that menu anyway? I was here last time I used this program. I didn't take it out. It must be here somewhere. And you know, the business for repetitive stress injury doctors just started booming. And then a smart guy named Frando came along and he said, hey, we can go back to typing commands. And he made this thing that originally it was just another Drupal module, but it hooked into the command line and it allowed you to do operations you would normally do in the GUI just by typing into your terminal. And this allowed people to write scripts that would automate things they did frequently and really sped up a lot of tasks that go into developing a typical Drupal site.
Nicely done. That was a very good explanation.
Almost like I've done it before.
Out of curiosity, how long have you been working on the development side of Drush versus just being like an end user of it, of the tool?
Oh, well, I became a contributor to Drush almost immediately. I found Drush because I was scrolling through the alphabetical list of modules, which is something you could actually do in Drupal 6. And I read, you know, Drush, the command line shell, and I love shells and scripting, so I got very excited. And the first thing I noticed about Drush was that it supported multiple databases, but it didn't support Postgres fully, and that's what I use. So I was right in the queue with some Postgres patches, and it was very encouraging how quickly they got committed. So I started working on these little features called site aliases and SQL sync because I wanted to make it easier to move my databases from one version of my site to another, perhaps on remote machines. And the way to do that in Drush back in version 2 required a lot of parameters. So site aliases sort of sprang up as a way to manage your remote sites and not have to type the same parameters over and over again. And so sometime early 2010, I became a co-maintainer of all of that code that I wrote, and I've been a fairly large contributor to Drush 3, 4, 5, 6, and now the master branch, which is soon going to become Drush 7.
Nice. Awesome. Well, anyway, I love the tool, so thank you. I just want to get that out of the way. It's a command line tool. What makes Drush like different and special, I guess, in terms of why you would end up using this? I mean, I guess you kind of answered that in the, you have your pointy clicky, but what else is it? I mean, it does more than just remove pointy clicky, doesn't it?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think the thing that really differentiates Drush compared to some of the other command line tools that are starting to spring up for your WordPress and your Joomla sites is that Drush is really good at managing sites with site aliases and doing remote commands through the whole backend invoke mechanism. And most users of Drush, the wonderful thing is they don't need to know anything about backend invoke, which is actually a fairly gnarly piece of code. You just use your site alias, and if it happens to be a remote machine, it appears to work for you just about the same way that it would work if the alias was pointing to a local machine. And it actually took a lot of work, you know, fiddling around with backend invoke and SSH options and different modes for setting up your terminal to really make sure that that would all work smoothly. But you know, no one really needs to worry about how to do that. If they want to write their own Drush command, they can just drop it into their remote site and it's going to run really easily. So I think that is a very special thing that, that Drush has that the other tools don't really have right now.
Yeah.
Something else that I find special in Drush is its vast community. There are so many commands and modules available in Drupal.org for Drush, and these some of them they go way beyond than just replacing a user interface. You can find commands for managing patches, so you can download and apply patches from downloading them from Drupal.org and applying them to your project and keep a list of them, or building wrappers, like for example a Casper.js wrapper that may run Casper.js test against a given site. It could be even a remote site if you give a site alias to it. So if you just search for Drush in the Drupal.org, there's such a long list of modules there, and you can just find you can find a lot of useful stuff for whatever your need is.
Cool. So all right, so it's an awesome tool, but it hooks into the command line, which already sounds a little bit suspicious in terms of setting this up and getting it installed. How do you actually install Drush? Like, how does that work? Because you said, Greg, you said it started out as a module, but if it started that way and isn't anymore, what is it now?
Well, now it is a command line tool that is independent of Drupal. And the reason that was done is that people wanted to be able to have their one Drush and to be able to target any site that they were working on. And so separating it and taking it out of the whole module workflow really made that code a lot cleaner and more straightforward. So installation now is actually surprisingly easy. If you just follow the instructions on the README, it's a simple matter of installing Composer and then running a Composer require, and you can pull in either the master branch of Drush with this, or you can pull in the stable version 6, which is currently what is the supported stable release. And some people are having a little bit of trouble with this, but it's just that Composer is new to some people. Mm-hmm. But you just need to get over your fear of the new, because Composer really makes it a lot easier. Should I jump into part two now?
Well, yeah. First, though, can you explain what Composer is? Like, just because if that's a new word for a lot of people out there, what is it? And then why did Drush move to using Composer rather than the old way where you put the script in there and had to monkey with some stuff to get it all hooked up?
Yeah. Well, there, you answered my question for me. So Composer is more than a package manager. Composer is a dependency manager. So with Composer, every package declares its requirements. And this is very similar to how Drupal works today in Drupal 6 and Drupal 7. Your modules can declare which modules they need. But a Composer package also can declare not only which packages it needs, but which version or which range of versions it works with. And usually that comes in the form of saying what major version of the package it works with, you know, anything from 1.x that's not yet 2.x. And then Composer will go through and it will find all of the packages that make up a project, and it'll examine all of their dependencies together, and it'll find the right version of each package that satisfies all of the dependencies, and it'll load all of that stuff up. If it can't do it, it gives you a very nice error message, and it tells you all of the packages and versions that are in conflict, and then that'll give you some good tools to go out and see if you can upgrade or downgrade some packages. You know, hopefully there's good documentation out there, and you can find some combination of things that work together. The other half of Composer, in addition to installing, is auto-loading. This is a new thing in PHP. Not so new by how many years it's been around, but it's new to a lot of people.
And I should, just real quickly, I just want to point out, Composer is a PHP tool, correct?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Composer is very PHP specific. There are similar tools for other languages, but Composer is strictly a PHP thing. Mm-hmm. And it's really rapidly becoming the standard way to handle package and dependency management, because it's really very, very easy to keep things up to date and working. Mm-hmm. In Drupal today, if you have a module that needs a library, then you need to install the libraries module, and you need to put the libraries you want in the right place, and then you hope that it gets initialized correctly. And sometimes it can take an hour or two just to figure out how to install some tricky module. But with Composer, you get your project together and you run Composer install, and it does everything for you, pulls it all into the right place. And if you've never tried Composer, you should try it, because it will just give you an immediate sense of relief.
Cool. So, all right. I interrupted you. You're going to talk about auto-loading, right?
Yes. So in auto-loading, when you're writing procedural PHP, if there's some code you need to use, then you have to know exactly where that code is located, and you have to run the include statement and include the file that you want. And auto-loading, you just instantiate a new class. So you say, my variable equals my path, to the class that you want. And then PHP will automatically load the file that contains that class using the information and capabilities that Composer provides. And at first glance, you might say, why is that important? Because, you've just saved me one line of code. Is that really a big deal? And it actually is a big deal, because that one line of code is really hard to get right. You don't want to hard code the path to your dependencies, and you don't want to have to try to figure out in your code how to handle version management of all your dependencies, or where to get it if it's not on the user's machine, with open source licensing sometimes being varying. You don't want to always bundle things together, and you have to download it, and that means download it from where. And Composer just handles all of that for you seamlessly.
Nice. So that's why Drush ended up moving to that, just because there are dependencies and the auto-loading setup stuff. Is that the main motivation with that, or are there other reasons?
Yeah, well, Drush had a couple of dependencies in the old days. Like the PHP console table was one example. And so what would happen with Drush in version 6 and before is, the first time you ran it, it would go out to the net and it would download the console table and write it inside of Drush's code directory. And this would cause problems to people who would install Drush as a privileged user and then try to run it as an unprivileged user. And it caused a lot of problems for Windows users for this reason. So we switched to Composer when we wanted to pull in another library, the PHP CLI. There's a REPL, a replace edit line editor, where you can just type PHP code in an interactive prompt and have it execute. And we made a Drush wrapper for this. So Drush would bootstrap your Drupal site, and then you'd be in a little interactive shell where you could type commands and call any function available in your Drupal site, which was really cool. The guy who provided this package did a really good job, and it was provided through Composer. So we figured that there's two ways we could do this. We could do it the hard way, the same way we're doing console table, or we could do it the easy way. So we switched to using Composer for the console table and everything else that Drush gets. And now the benefit is, if you just go to your command lines and say Composer require Drush, Composer is going to see that Drush needs this console table and it needs this PHP REPL, and it's going to go out and get those, and it's going to install them at the same time that it installs Drush. So we could take out all of that code we put in to find and download and unpackage the console table. It made things a lot better for us and a lot better for our users.
Cool. Sweet. We've been talking about a lot of the things that Drush can do, and it sounds pretty technical, aliases and server things, and there's a range of stuff that Drush can do, and is it a developer's tool, and is it designed to be that, or does it step outside of that in some ways too?
Well, there's a lot of different answers to that. Drush is very useful to site builders, and it's very useful to developers, and I've even used it to SQL sync the MySQL database for Bugzilla install. Commands are completely agnostic of the Drupal Bootstrap. You can do a lot of different things with it. It just depends on your needs and your experience level. There's a new Drush tool called Drushify. If you just run Drush, Drushify, and you give it some name, then this tool will make yourself a little Drush command that you can fill in and put your own code in there. So now it's really, really easy to write your own Drush commands. People who are just dabbling with programming could look into that.
Right.
See what they can do with it. If you can write a little PHP, Drush will add your command line handling and options and Drupal bootstrapping, and you just do the core stuff you need.
Nice. That's awesome.
I like to say that with Drush you can do things simple things such as, for example, querying caches to pushing it to the limits by using it to help you set up a whole development workflow for a team with all of its processes for a given Drupal project.
Yeah, I would say, Drush CC all is sort of like one of those muscle memory things that I think people who are building websites, in my use of Drush, I would say 90% of what I do is just on the site builder side, doing things like installing modules, updating modules, clearing my cache, like just in terms of like normal day-to-day activities that I do. And then occasionally I use the aliasing and the syncing and that kind of a thing to sort of keep things in sync. But I myself haven't done crazy things with Drush. So I feel like it is, and again, like there, I guess there's been a lot of technical talking about like Composer, and like, Composer, I don't know, it's this crazy tool thing, and I don't, but Composer's pretty easy to set up, and then getting Drush installed once you have Composer is super simple, and just going through those two little steps, like as just a site builder, if you're just someone who points and clicks in Drupal a lot, Drush has a lot of just really wonderful tools that make it much simpler. Like you said at the beginning, instead of having to point and click everywhere, I can just, type in a few words and it takes care of lots of things on my site. I mean, you can do all kinds of cool stuff like log in as a particular user. it's really kind of a huge tool when you think about it. Like, all of the things that it can do is a little bit crazy in a wonderful, crazy way, but still that sounds a little bit overwhelming. Like how would people even know what you can do? And I know there's documentation on the Drush website, and we'll put a link for that. But one of the reasons that Wompy's on is because Wompy has just finished writing an entire book just on Drush, right? Like, it's just a book on Drush. So why is a whole book on Drush needed? Like, what drove you to actually do that?
My initial impulse to write a book was that I found that there was a lot of documentation in both in Drupal.org and out of Drupal.org in the web. And, well, Drupalize Drupal as Me has also a section on Drush, but I found that there was nothing comprehensive and deep that covered, like, I wouldn't say all of it, but a huge portion of it. Like, I realized I needed something like, hey, I want to learn Drush, and okay, so here you are, you know, read this book, and this will give you an overall view of what it does. And this is actually my second book on Drush. I wrote another one 3 years ago, and it was just that, a comprehensive guide, like, hey, this is what Drush can do, here are its commands, here is what you can do with each of them. While this new book is the other way around, it's mainly how I use Drush in my day-to-day. So it explains you the Drush features and commands and internals, but through examples, through like, hey, how do you do this in a Drupal project? Well, this is the way, and we're using Drush over that process. So again, when I was about to write the second book, I saw that there wasn't anything out there that took that approach on Drush. There's a lot of internet that says, how can you do X with Drush?
Right.
But normally users would have the opposite problem. Like, they want to know how to solve a problem, and they may not know that Drush is the answer, or which features of Drush will help them to solve that. So that's the main reason.
Right. Well, and that makes sense. Yeah. Like, having a you know, a technical list of all the things that Drush can do and how to use those things. And, you know, like the Drush documentation on Drush.org is very good in terms of, here's all these commands and this is what this command does. But that thing that you're talking about there of, like, I have a problem is, you know, how could this tool potentially help me? And when you have like a million different things that you're looking at, I find it overwhelming. Like, I know Drush can probably help me do what I need to do, but it's a matter of trying to figure out exactly how it's going to do that, or what things am I supposed to be looking up, you know, to investigate that and stuff like that. So, yeah. And I guess Mompy, how long have you been using Drush yourself?
Roughly about 6 years, I would say.
Yeah.
It's mainly that since I started using Drupal, like,
right.
I came from Symfony, and I started using Drupal, and first thing I hated it because it, you know, I was using a framework and just coding and seeing code, and then I had to do things on the screen, which was, I don't know, it didn't fit in my head, until one of my colleagues told me, hey, but you know, you can do things also in the command line, and I was like, oh yeah, so this may change my perception of Drush, and it totally did it. Like, I'm pretty sure that if it wasn't for Drush, I wouldn't be doing, I wouldn't have stayed through it doing Drupal development.
Fascinating. Cool. Well, let's look a little bit towards the future. So there's been, I mean, Drush has been around for a long time. I don't know how long, but it's...
Drupal 4.7.
Okay, yeah. I was going to say, because it seems to me like Drush is basically, like, it started to form around the time that I started with the Drupal project myself, and then it took a little while for it to kind of catch on, for people to start using it. So it's been around for a really long time, and it's obviously gone through quite a few iterations. But what is the Drush team working on now? I mean, it's not like a done thing, right? There's always something else out there. So what are the things on the horizon for Drush?
Well, the one thing we're pushing for right now is a Drush 7 stable release, as we put a lot of stuff into the current master branch, and we want to just get that out there and make that part of the stable release that everyone is going to be using. So anyone who's into contributing to Drush, now is a really good time to jump into the queue, because we're going to have multiple maintainers in there active, trying to get things ready for doing the next stable release. And if you want to contribute to that, just take a look at issue 1123. Can put a link on the podcast page.
Yeah, So what are the big differences between Drush 6 and Drush 7?
Oh, you've stumped me there.
Ha-ha.
See, I only use the master branch of Drush.
Right.
Every day, my life is Drush master, and if there's a bug that stops me from doing something, then I pretty much, you know, I jump in and fix it.
And then you go and you add
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Yeah. And we have a policy that we don't break backwards compatibility for major versions, but if we can add something and not break backwards compatibility, then we push it back to the stable branch.
Gotcha.
So Drush 6 really has a lot of the stuff in it that Drush 7 already does, but one thing it doesn't have is the Composer install.
Right.
And you can use Composer to install Drush 6, but then Drush 6 is going to go off and pull down the console table from... Yeah, so...
I tell you, Greg, what you just said on backwards compatibility, I may have to edit my book because I my perception is, and I say this literally, is like, the Drush maintainers do a good job on keeping backwards compatibility. And the reason why I say this is because when I swap between versions from 7 to 6, things work. Like, I rarely see a big bug when I run a command, no matter if I use Drush 7 or Drush 6.
Right.
Well, that's good to hear, because I mean, backwards compatibility is important for us, but we do keep the policy that we're allowed to break it in order to fix things inside of major releases. And that's one of the things I was a little bit worried about. I was really happy that you were writing your book right off of the master branch, but you know, there was always that danger that we might have made some startling, massive change in between the publication date and when 7 Stable goes out.
Yeah.
And I don't think we're going to do that.
That's always the danger of writing a book.
I had that issue with the first book where Drush 4 was the stable one and Drush 5 was about to be released, but we didn't know. It's the same thing right now with Drush 6 and Drush 7 being master. And the output out of it was that things didn't change that much. And I got a negative reaction with the audience because there were a lot of people who said, oh, but it's Drush 4, but Drush 5 is right off the way. And then after a few months, they said, oh, but I have Drush 5 already because it's stable and the book is on Drush 4. I would tell them things haven't changed that much. So, you know, most of the stuff will still work. Even now, most of the contents of the book still apply to what you have now because the book is like Drush core mainly. So that's the reason why I chose to use like the latest heading master for the new book, because it actually has some benefits on it. I can cover more stuff because it can do many more things.
Mm-hmm. How long has Drush 7 been, like, when did that new branch get started and start like looking at that road?
Well, you know, technically the branch was started the instance that 6.0 stable went out, and I've got to think that was a couple of years ago, but I'd have to check my notes. But, you know, the more time that goes on, the more that master diverges from 6.
Right.
So, you know, especially what's happening right now with Drush and Composer, that I think the thing that's the most different between Drush 7 stable and Drush 6 hasn't really happened yet. Because we're seeing a lot of velocity in the Drupal community right now of people getting really interested in using Composer to manage all of their files for the Drupal site as well. And this gets interesting and exciting when you say, okay, well, now you've got your Drupal site managed with Composer, and you've got your Drush site managed with Composer, and someone has made a Drush plugin that's a global plugin not associated with any site, and it wants to use a library from Composer, and maybe that's the same library as one that's used in Drupal core. So, you know, we, the Drush maintainers, and members of the Drupal community, like Rob Loach and David Barrett, have been doing things to make the experience of Composer with Drupal and Drush better. And so we are working on making Composer even, you know, more of a standard in terms of how you use it for your Drupal sites. And we would like to see, we have this vision that, you know, Composer is bigger and better than Drush Make, and we ultimately can replace Drush Make and Drush DL and Drush PM update code, all with composer operations on the back end, which will make things more streamlined and consistent, and also make the auto-loading better because, you know, it's possible. Yeah, Composer knows. And it's possible to take multiple autoload files and pull them into one project all at the same time. But if there's a conflict at autoload time, then you just get a mysterious error that something's defined twice or I don't know what's going on. You know, it works if it works. And if it doesn't work, then it's mysterious. So we'd really like to see Composer install time being the time when all of the dependencies are examined and the autoload files are generated in one place.
How does this relate to Drupal 8? So in terms of like the use of Composer sort of, in the Drupal vocabulary these days. And what about like Drush and Drupal 8 compatibility?
Yeah, okay, those are actually two rather different questions. Mm-hmm. So since we're talking about Composer, I'm going to answer the Composer half of that first. And maybe you can circle back to the compatibility thing later.
Okay.
So it's not just the Drupal community that's standardizing on Composer. We also have people in the Joomla community and the WordPress community, and both Drupal 7 and Drupal 8, using Composer to manage their core files and their plugins and modules and themes and install profiles and whatever it is, you can turn it into a Composer package. But most of these projects, your WordPress and your Joomla and your Drupal 7, they have it pretty easy. It's not too hard to manage the site with the Composer. But Drupal 8 is just a little bit harder. And the reason it's a little bit harder is that Drupal 8 itself has a composer.json file, and Drupal 8 itself is a project. So usually the way Composer works is you have a project and you control the composer.json file and you decide which packages you want to load. But if you just take Drupal 8, and you've already got a project now, and there's already a composer.json file there. So if you want to add more modules, and you want to add them by putting them into your composer.json file instead of downloading them with Drush DL, then you've got a couple of choices. One is you can hack core and just modify the composer.json file. And that sounds kind of scary, but it's not as bad as it historically has been. Because as I mentioned, the standard for Composer is that your project manager, or the person who's in charge of the project, is the one who's supposed to be managing all of those files at the root. So option number one is you can do what's called split core. And what's happened is some people in the Drupal community have taken the Git repository that contains all of the Drupal files, and they've split the core directory off into a separate Git submodule, and they published that in Packagist.
Oh, wow.
So Packagist is the thing that Composer goes to find packages. It is the dependency manager for Composer. And you said, oh wow, that sounds very complicated and scary, but for an end user, because Composer is handling everything for you, you don't really need to worry about that. You just tell Composer that I would like to download this project, and this project is called Drupal. And so we've got a template somewhere out there that says, here's a Drupal project, and you get your core directory, which is from this split core, and you get all of your files at the root that aren't in the core directory, and now it's up to you to manage these files. That includes things like .htaccess and index.html. So what is happening in the Drupal 8 community to make things easier is they're taking all of the logic they can out of index.php and they're putting it into files inside the core directory. So when you need to update Drupal in Drupal 8 as time goes along, you'll almost never need to change any of these root files. It'll all happen in the core directory, and Composer will just handle it for you. So that's option number one, and that's pretty much what it seems like the community is settling on as the standard, as the split core. And the split core was just committed to Drupal core recently, but we're 6 to 12 months probably behind in terms of waiting for Drupal.org to catch up to actually be able to publish things in a form that can be handled by, you know, Composer and Packagist. But in the meantime, we have community members who have written tools that take what Drupal.org does and convolve it into packages, and they've published those. So today, using the third-party repositories, you can use Composer to manage your Drupal site. Now, if all of this Composer stuff and managing Drupal sites with Composer and packages sounds a little bit scary and hard to get started with, there is now a Drush project called Composer Generate. And you can just run Drush Composer Generate, and you point it at an existing Drupal 7 site, and it'll make a composer.json file for you. And then you can later run Composer install on that JSON file, and it will reconstitute all of your code. So the vision we're talking about here then is that now we use Composer to handle all of the code resources in your Drupal project, and you use Drush Make to manage everything else, your configuration and your user upload files and things of that nature. And hopefully Composer Generate will soon work with Drupal 8. Right now it does Drupal 7 only, but it's just a simple matter of getting the right template files to do either the core split or your other option is that you can make your own project in a folder above Drupal and include Drupal as a requirement of your project instead of using Drupal as the project. So that's what you do with Drupal 7 or anything that isn't using Composer to manage its files already. And with Drupal 8, you'll have the choice of doing it one way or the other, depending on how concerned you are about keeping up with changes to htaccess. Which hopefully won't happen very often.
Right. Yes, that's the theory.
Great. Yeah, that Composer Generate command sounds very promising. I remember experiencing this issue of having to add a library through Composer while I was writing a Drupal 8 module, and I couldn't because Drupal already ships with the Composer log file. Like, it has already downloaded all of the libraries, and you as a module developer, you are building a module, and there's no way for you to define like more libraries that should be added. For example, when the module is installed, like, for example, I had to download an extra library for Guzzle, and this library was available through Composer, and there was no way to do it. So I'll have a look. That command sounds really, really promising for it.
Yes, today we have something called Composer Manager, which is a Drupal 8 module, and it will sort of jury-rig you through being able to use Composer modules and packages inside of Drupal 8. But it's a less intuitive way of doing it, and I think as this community efforts to just bring Drupal core into Drupal move forward, everyone will find that it's a much more natural way to just use the native Composer features once we've done the work to make that possible.
Nice. Awesome. Well, we should probably wrap things up a little bit, but I wanted to ask just one quick final question, and then if you guys have anything else you want to slip in there, make sure you do get that in there. But what is your personal favorite Drush feature that you think is just amazing?
My favorite Drush feature is one you already mentioned before. You can log in as any user. And the nifty thing about that is if your site alias is pointing at a remote Drupal site, then Drush will just seamlessly go and generate the login link on the remote site, and it'll open the browser window on your local site, so you can log into remote sites from your desktop.
Nice. How about you, Wampy?
For me, it's more it's more related with the developer experience, and it's something that I came across not long ago, and it totally amazed me. Like, I thought I loved Drush when I realized about it, and the the case was that we wrote a Drush alias. It's like a Linux alias for the team to download the development database. So they didn't have to do Drush, SQL, Sync, dev site alias, my site alias. You know, if you get those two wrong, you're in trouble, and some extra options. And so we wrote a one-line shell alias for it. But then we had some issues because the database was too big. So we had to write an actual command that would do some optimizations on the process. And so we turned that alias into a Drush command. And the beauty of it is that we published that to the repository, and the rest of the team didn't have to make any change in how they downloaded the database. It's just that the process got better. There's more logic to it, but it's totally transparent for the development team. And yeah, I love that.
Awesome. Cool. Anybody have any last thoughts before we wrap things up?
I'd like to say, see you at DrupalCon LA. We are going to be submitting a Drush Core session, so we should have a lot of interesting things to say about Composer and Drush at that time.
Cool.
Hope a lot of people will show up to see that.
Yeah, in May. I'm definitely going to be there. Sweet. Okay, well, thank you both a whole lot for coming on and wow, for me personally, the whole like Composer, I'm like, yeah, okay, Composer, I get like Composer, I've heard of it, I understand what it is, but this has been a really great insight into what's actually going on with all of that stuff. So very, very exciting stuff. Yeah, thanks a lot. If any of our listeners, if you have questions from this podcast or other topics you would like to have us cover on the podcast, let us know. You can leave a comment on this podcast page on lullabot.com, or you can let us know through drupalize.me/contact, our contact form, or on Twitter. So twitter.com/drupalizeme and Facebook, same thing, facebook.com/drupalizeme. Talk to us. Let us know what you're thinking. And until next time, happy Drupaling, everybody. Drupalize me.